Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora l'ultimo!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
I think I'm going to keep the little intro mishap there in the video this week. So everyone, you get to see a little behind the scenes. Ollie missed the countdown and got a little mad at emojis on the screen, but you'll see. We're doing that now. You can follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45. You also got Madison with us.
Yeah, you guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Excellent stuff. The team have given up, so we might as well. good start. Right then, lads. We're all a bit angry, I would imagine, after what went on Saturday night in Florence. I'm guessing the title of this, even though I haven't thought about it for the moment, is going to be something VAR related. It feels like we should be recording this after a win. I'm not saying that it was our best performance of the season by any stretch of the imagination, because I don't think it was. And there are certainly decisions within the game which we'll come on to where we could have done better. But that was pretty much robbery.
Yeah, we won that game.
Yeah.
That was
good win.
Yep. Good win, easy 3 points. On to the next one. Here we go. That was not a handball by my account. I saw that video that Milan TV released today where it hit his chest, and then people were saying it hit, I already forgot his name, but the Fiorentina defender's arm off Zlatan's chest and on Zlatan's arm. I didn't quite catch that because I didn't watch the video religiously. It was just pissing me off, to be honest. But when I saw the picture after the game initially, it looked like it kind of hit his chest and arm, like almost armpit area, a little lower. And I also thought it was deflected off of Daubert, which it was not after I watched the replay. So I don't know. I mean, that doesn't get called last year. It does this year because the rule changed. But I feel like it just also doesn't. I don't know. It's harsh. It's really harsh, especially when it was such a beautiful goal. I mean, that was the sickest goal I've seen from Milan this season, if not in multiple seasons. But I'm getting pissy thinking about it. I don't want to discuss this game long. Sorry.
I think it hit his inner elbow. You know, like right here. I think it was a very soft call. You know, I don't think that you call that a handball, but it was called. The refs suck, and it's time to look on to the forward to the next game.
I would also like to, you know, just spend a minute on this. It's hard because what it feels like, and I think that you can deal with certain incidents in isolation and say, do you know what, there was poor communication there. VAR, sadly, at the moment, isn't a perfect system. And I think you could also accept it if, or as a fan base, we could accept it as Milan fans. We could accept it if we felt like things were balancing themselves out. And if we felt like they were if we felt like overall we were getting, you know, the rub of the green on certain ones, and on other ones you could say, we should have got that. I don't know whether we should just stop here at this point.
Just continue, whatever. We'll explain it later.
Madison's gone to kill a spider on the wall. Has he got it?
I don't want any baby spiders running around, so.
Coronavirus.
You guys could have just ignored the fact that I walked away, but now
it was hard.
Thing.
Anyways, continue.
Yeah. I feel like we could accept it a lot more if we were getting, you know, we felt like things were balancing themselves out, and perhaps for everyone that went against us, one went for us. But it feels like over the last few weeks, things just haven't really been going our way. We had obviously the call on Calabria in the Coppa Italia semi-final first leg, where we are looking at a completely different tie if we're going to Juve with an advantage heading into the second leg, and particularly without having conceded a goal. We didn't get that. You know, everything was centered around how VAR categorically got that call wrong because the Italian Referees Association had already agreed earlier in the season they weren't going to call those anymore. And then we come to this Fiorentina game where it didn't look like a handball. By definition, it's not, because it didn't give Ibra any discernible advantage. You know, if his arm was outstretched, you could say that it assisted his control, but the ball just fell down from his chest. You know, I feel like we've had another one like that this season as well. But and then, as you say, it was an amazing goal. The trucking run that he went on was fantastic, and it just kind of embodies everything that he's brought to the team. And it was a great finish as well. I went absolutely mental. And then I couldn't believe when I saw that they were checking it for VAR, but I couldn't believe that they reached a decision within, certainly inside a minute, probably inside 30 seconds. It was as if they couldn't wait to give that handball. And that really pissed me off. And then, of course, you've got the other controversial incident with Dalbert, who pulled back Ibra, who, I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess if that's Rafael Leao or if that's Rebic, if that's someone with a bit more speed, I would say they're definitely through on goal. I thought that perhaps actually the initial yellow card call on that might have been correct, but then they went to the VAR and saw that it's Ibra, you know, he is going to get a shot away there, and it probably does end up being a goal because it's Zlatan. Decided to give a straight red card. There were mixed protests about it, I guess. You know, they weren't totally up in arms. And then the penalty, man. The penalty is the thing that annoys me the most, because apparently, according to various media reports, the referee Calvarese tried to justify it after the game to Maldini and to other members of the management by saying, oh yeah, Romagnoli touched the ball, but it didn't change direction because of that. And it's like, what else could it have been?
Yeah, like, the wind?
That is just like, I don't get it. I said before, VAR is an imperfect system. I guess we have to live with certain things where they need to come up with some like blanket rule, whatever. But it feels like it's taken a massive step backwards this season. Mm-hmm. It really does. It feels like we're talking about it more and more.
I think every big decision in that game, all three that we just discussed, I think the ref got wrong. I don't think it was a red card on Dalbert. I don't think it was a handball. And I certainly don't think it was a penalty. I think that's a... It's really bad. And we've had that back to back to back. You know, obviously, the Juve game, we already went over. The exact same referee looked at the exact same call in the game the very next day, didn't give it. And then we had this situation. It's, you know, there's got to be a way to almost retroactively review these things. I mean, if the play continues where it's a penalty like that, if the refereeing associations already agree that they're not calling that, they should be able to retroactively retract that. I know that's not fair in the spirit of the game, and I don't know if that's the right solution, but there's got to be a way, you know, even with this handball, since they reviewed it after a goal, if they all agree in this association that, hey, that probably was the wrong call, that then retroactively let the goal stand or something. Obviously, I'm speaking from bias, but there's just got to be a way to referee the referees, and that's what VAR is supposed to do, but it's just referees helping referees, you know?
Right.
And
yeah, it is.
I don't mean that maliciously. It's just like they're on a team, you know? It's a clique, whether we want to admit it or not. They want to back each other because that's how you do it, just like the players would back each other. So there's got to be a way around it. I don't know if it's former players doing it, but then you get team bias, player bias. I don't know. You know, that there's a solution out there, and unfortunately, I don't think anyone has it at the moment, but there's definitely a clear issue, and it needs to be addressed.
You know, as an AC Milan fan, I absolutely agree. But as like a fan of sports, don't let a call come down to deciding a game. Play well enough.
Should have been a 2-0 win, but there were two bad calls.
Play well enough where that call goes against you. All right, well, let's regroup, do better. You know, like it sucks, but don't let one call decide a game.
But it wasn't one.
This was exactly.
And I agree with you, Maddie, 100%. I'm big on that. Like, I'm a big combat sport guy. You know that. I'm always against, like, never leave it in the hand of the judges, all that good stuff. But when it's one call taking away a goal, okay, bounce back, get another goal. We did that. But then there's a second call giving them a goal that shouldn't have been. And, I mean, it's just...
It is enough to drive you mental.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you guys know I reacted very poorly after the game and was pretty upset for a few days. I'm still upset today, but, you know, here we are. It's just... It's frustrating because you started this season, man. We started at such a low point. We built back up. There were so many highs, and then we were starting to drop back down again. and it started the week before Inter, and it just, right when you think, okay, we're going to pick it back up, we're back on track, things start crashing down, and this time it's not our fault, and that's the shittiest part. If it is our fault, we all suck it up and say, look, we're trash, we got to make changes in the summer, but this time it's like, what more can we do besides scoring 17 goals per game? That's the only way we could do it, but it's just...
It's a difficult one, and I agree with... I agree with the idea that the referees are kind of protecting each other. They are; they're all part of essentially the same group, the same body. But the problem is that, you know, you might want to say as a fan, surely it's in the best interests of the game that the majority of decisions are, you know, the wrong decisions are overturned by VAR. But there are actually people, and there are actually things that are monitoring how many times VAR overturns decisions. And I think that They've sort of got that in the back of their mind, and they think the more decisions that are overturned, the worse that the standard of refereeing looks. And that probably should ring true. But that's why it comes back to this idea that they're protecting each other, looking after each other. And I don't think there's enough minutes in the day for the whole conspiracy theory thing, even if people are revisiting it like they have been. I've seen on social media and stuff like that. And I also agree with the idea of I also agree with the idea that you should never leave it in the judges' hands. I totally agree with that. But perhaps the Juve game, in a sense, was the perfect example of what else could we have done. You know, we went into that game. We weren't exactly riding a wave after the 4-2 derby defeat, but we did enough to beat Juve that night. We were 1-0 up. And I think most would agree that we would have been fair 1-0 winners in that game. And then that decision went against us in the very sort of final few moments of the game. And they come away with a 1-1 draw. How do you then turn around and tell the players, well, you should have done more to make sure we won that? It was literally the one incident that went against us in that game, and it ended up costing us the result. I agree with that Fiorentina game. I don't think we handled the final 10 minutes particularly well with a man advantage. I didn't think we attacked particularly well. I thought we were sloppy while we were in possession. We actually looked like the team who had 10 men at times. And then could you
make a lot of that came down to the substitutions, though, and I don't think they were Pioli's fault. I think he was just dealt a bad hand, you know. Begovic coming on for an injured Donnarumma.
He did well.
Gabbia coming off for Musacchio because he was hurt. Castillejo coming off because he was hurt. I mean, these are changes that he wouldn't have made if under normal circumstances, you know.
Didn't Gabbia start the game?
He did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't. I know you said he was hurt. I don't think he was he?
Gabbia. Yeah.
Oh, was he?
He said he had some muscular like tightening in his thigh or calf.
Well, thankfully, there's nothing come of that. There were a few players who were doing some recovery on Monday today at Milanello, but he wasn't one of them, so it clearly can't be too big of a problem. But yeah, I thought he had a decent game, to be fair. And Begovic did as well. We could be looking at 0 points if it wasn't for that save that he made on Caceres. And it sounds like Donnarumma may miss the Genoa game with a slight ankle sprain, so it is nice that we do have an actual backup that we can kind of
rely on. To be fair to Begovic, he did get a hand on the penalty. It was just...
Yeah, he guessed the right way. I thought it was a good pen. I thought it was a good pen.
It was a good pen, and honestly, aside from it not being saved, it was fantastic effort from Begovic. He did not move off his line at all. Who took the penalty? Pulgar.
Eric Pulgar, yeah.
Yeah, he did all the stutters, everything, tried to get a move out of Begovic, and he stood firm. And that's something that many goalkeepers don't do. And to be honest, I don't think Donnarumma would have done. I think Donnarumma
would have. No, he wouldn't have. Yeah.
He does that. And I think it would have been an easier goal for
him. I think Donnarumma gives away where he's going to dive a little bit sooner. But also, you know, no criticism towards Donnarumma because his penalty saving record's actually pretty good. So
yeah, it's solid.
He'll be able to learn stuff from Begovic without a doubt, I think.
And I think that's one of them, that stonewall readiness. I mean, that's impressive. Many experienced keepers don't do that. So I was happy to see that. Obviously sad to see it went in. And unfortunately, that's just age, I think, just body getting a little weaker, you know. But to make a low save like that or to get a hand on it, if Donnarumma did the exact thing Begovic did, he would have saved it, you know?
Yeah, I don't think he would have. Honestly, I think Begovic did better than Donnarumma would have done in that position.
No,
sure.
I agree. I'm saying if Donnarumma did the exact same thing that
Begovic did,
strong enough to keep it out.
I think Donnarumma is slightly more agile. It feels like he has a slightly bigger frame, and he you know, he's more likely to touch the other post, I guess. But I feel like we're splitting hairs with a really good, really good penalty. But we've seen like a game and a half now, roughly, when you factor in the substitution when Simon Kier came off for Gabby. We've seen about a game and a half of him now. He looks pretty good. He actually looks, you know, you can't judge him based on 130 minutes, whatever it is, but he does kind of look like the real deal. Like him and Romagnoli complement each other surprisingly well.
He's doing
happy, with it. Could have turned out much worse, and I think it's going in his benefit for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it's particularly easy now for Musacchio to get straight back into the team. I really don't.
He's falling down the pecking order.
Yeah,
I kind of feel bad for him, but at the same time, he did so cost us so many points off of stupid mistakes. I feel like an easy wins, and that's what happens.
I do think we have, outside of all the injuries we've experienced, we actually have a good amount of depth right now at center back, and that's something we haven't had in a while. Because Musacchio's not a bad fourth choice center back if he's behind Kier and apparently Gabia, who's been solid. So,
how long do you think he's going to be at the club, though? Do you think he's going to leave this summer, or do you think he'll Musacchio?
He might leave this summer. And what are his wages like? They're more than Kier and obviously Gabia, so maybe because we only need three or four, you know. Three center backs, right?
I think our depth situation looks better now. Gabia's turned out to be good. If we'd have thrown him on in that game against Torino and he had struggled to deal with Belotti, you know, I think we might be talking about something slightly different here, especially with the bad luck that we've had with the other two guys, and obviously Duarte's out long term.
Duarte.
and then you look at particularly the fact we don't have a backup left-sided centre back. If Romagnoli were to get injured in the next game, we would be in deep shit. And then, you know, you always want to try and play those same three, you know, the left back, left sided centre back, right sided centre back, because we've got no consistency at all at right back. And that was another thing that I think was lacking on Saturday. I was surprised that Calabria got dropped. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I don't get what Conte has. He must. Yeah.
I thought that. Or I feel like Conte just has this vision of having two fast outside backs, but Conte just is not fast anymore.
Mm.
And he's not very good at defending.
No, he's not. He's not. He's not the player that we thought we were signing. You know, we have talked about this before, but I just think for balance and everything, Calabria is a better defensive fullback.
Right. It makes more sense to have one being offensive, one being defensive, you know, covering both bases.
Especially with Gabia, who's breaking into the team. Him and Calabria played together in the youth team, right? Yeah, so they have that connection there.
Yeah, so,
and we've seen in two games now, Gabia get forward on separate occasions, which is kind of nice. You know, it's helpful to see that a little extra push.
As long
as
he drops back.
Well, yeah. I mean, it has been, but just to have that kind of
chemistry
going with, one up. One
down. I won't criticize Conte too much because it's not like he made an error that led to a goal or anything like that. I would just like to see some more consistency in the selection from Pioli. But like you say, perhaps Calabria coming back from an injury of his own was running on a little bit of an empty tank and he needed to make the change. But I hope that if both were fully fit, he'd see that Calabria is the better fit, in my opinion, anyway. And then the midfield, all right again, Kessié and Benacer. Benacer looks slightly better, but Kessié, you know, he knows his role. And then Rebic, bagging again.
Yeah, he's now the lone top scorer overall and in the league for us. So that's impressive. And unfortunately, it's gone under the radar because of the way the game ended. But yeah, the man's been unstoppable. It's definitely not who I thought would be the revelation for the second half.
No, we talked so much smack about him at the beginning of the season. He's just completely turned it around.
Yeah, and props to him.
I was one of those who said that we should give Castillejo go over Suso when he was struggling for form. But I didn't expect him to be this good. Would like just a little bit more in product in him, but you know, it's fine when Rebic is scoring and when Ibra looks good and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, with Rebic, I won't say any of us wrote him off. It was just a case of he needs to get an opportunity somewhere and he needs to grab it. And then it came.
I may have wrote him off.
Like I wrote him off too. I was like, who?
Probably this guy isn't doing it. Probably on attitude and not on ability though.
Yes.
And it seems like the attitude changed.
I don't know what it was, but that was one of the only players that we signed over the summer that I was actually excited for. So I think that's why I wrote him off so quickly, is because I wanted him to do well. And then all the signings I thought were going to be poor did pretty decent, and he was doing poor. And it just continued. And there was like three or four games towards the end of the first half of the season, right before his resurgence, that he just looked god-awful in, and I was just fed up. So I was done with him, and then the very next game, he's got that brace, and I was like, oh, okay, good for you. And then it hasn't stopped, so it's great.
Yeah, it was the Spal game in the Cup when he got a start, and it was the first 20 minutes, his first touch, he looked like Bambi on ice, like the ball was just flying everywhere. And then I think it was just a goal. Getting that first goal just gave him the confidence. And I thought initially that he was doing the celebration to the crowd, you know, where so he put his fingers in his ears. And then it turns out that is just his celebration. He does it anywhere he plays. Speaking of anywhere he's played, he's obviously played at Fiorentina and barely got a crack with them there. They loaned him out to Hayes Verona. They loaned him out to Leipzig. I think they loaned him to another club before they sold him to Eintracht Frankfurt.
I thought he did two or three seasons in Germany while owned by Fiorentina. I can't remember.
Yeah, that but sounds
he only
about
played
that.
Like 15 games for Fiorentina. Something,
I think it was less than that. I think he scored 3 goals in 7 games for Fiorentina. That might just be in the league, but I don't think that's too bad. But
no,
whatever, they didn't see any value in him. I think it'd be fair to say they wrote him off. And you could tell by his celebration, he was pretty fired up to score against them.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just because it was against them. I think going A, in the lead for the game, B, becoming our top goal scorer, and C, the Fiorentina aspect. But I think it was a combination. It wasn't just like got one over the old club. I think he's well beyond being butthurt about Fiorentina.
Talk about getting one over on your old club.
Let's not.
No. Hang on. But the Rebic thing, he didn't just celebrate the goal. He walked over to the Fiorentina bench and shouted a load of stuff at whoever.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah. When you watch it back, it is quite funny. But he goes over and, you know, I think the team are kind of trying to drag him away to just celebrate normally. And he just keeps shouting. And I don't know who he was shouting at. I don't know what he was saying and to whom, but
it can't be that many players still there from his time there. No, it must have been
ownership
some staff.
Is different, management's different, staff is different.
Yeah, I don't know. There will be a story in there somewhere, though.
There's got to be like even someone small, like a medical trainer who said this guy's just not good enough for Fiorentina, or
might
something
that.
That was there.
Yeah.
Something small that he remembered, you know.
I didn't really look at the comments, you know, that were made from the Fiorentina camp before the game, but maybe one of them said something about how, you know, he wasn't good enough, that ship sailed, and he just wanted to prove a point. But I found that interesting. And then we've got the Coutinho thing. I think this is a non-issue personally. Coutinho has always been a passion merchant or whatever. You know, whatever the term is nowadays, he celebrated every goal way over the top for Milan in a good way. We all loved it. We all absolutely loved it. You know, the way he kissed the badge and everything like that. And then, you know, I think the phrase one-way loyalty perhaps does apply in this sense. People expect him to behave with absolute 100% non-emotion in a game against his former team, especially when something good happens for his current employers, you know, the ones who actually pay his wages, like the late penalty, they expect him just not to celebrate. And then people are kicking off because he wanted to take the penalty. He's a striker. It would have been his first goal for the club. Really, can we blame him for that either? Like, I'm seeing people say he's a snake, say he's a traitor. What for? He got pushed out. He got told he wasn't wanted here. And I think he wanted to send a message to the people upstairs and not the fans.
I agree with that 100%. He was pushed out, wronged by Milan. But that said, the fans are the lifeblood of the club, you know, and he knows that.
I still love him every bit.
Before it happened. I didn't like him for a while before he left either. But so there's that. I didn't like that he was begging to take the penalty because he's not even a first string striker and he's not even their first string penalty taker. He's not even the second string, you know? And
yeah.
So there's no reason to be begging to take that when you're nowhere near the top of the pecking order against your former club that you claim to love as much as he claims.
No, but
he won it. So, you know, I think he wanted to take it to get his first goal and for that to be the headline.
Against any other club, I get that. But I don't know. I feel in that situation, you let your main goal scorer, your main penalty taker, take that so you could get the points for the club because that's what you need as a team. And, you know, you could celebrate with them, but respectfully. I don't think the way he did was respectful.
He wouldn't have done anything like that at San Siro, I'm fairly convinced. I think the Fiorentina fans have really taken to him and perhaps he wanted to give a little bit back to them by, you know, showing where his loyalties lie now. And that is that. With his current employers and the ones who are paying him, whatever, 70 grand a week. You know,
Before the game, he even was like in the Milan locker room, you know, and I get it, they're friends, but still, he's still being flirtatious with Milan. He's still trying to romanticize his career with us. And then to go and do that during a game, I don't know.
I don't think it's a different career situation. Thing. It goes beyond his football career. He grew up supporting the club.
Right.
He came through the youth. It's too embedded in him. But,
I agree. Milan's too embedded. So you know, chill out when you have an opportunity to score us.
Business is business, isn't it? You know, he's a guy who's going to be passionate.
But you could
score
a goal and not celebrate against them. That's fine. I wouldn't have blamed
him. I don't think he would have celebrated.
And he said he wouldn't have. But I don't think in a penalty situation you beg to take it to score against your old club. That's different.
I think when you are
from open play and didn't celebrate, I wouldn't be mad. It's, you know, it happens. Former players.
When you want to try and prove yourself at your new club, though, what better way to do it than scoring a penalty against your old club?
There are some teams as well. Some teams have a dedicated penalty list, whereas others don't. They go by a in-game decision, and sometimes it's the person who wins
does,
the penalty.
Though, if you look, it's always Pilgar. He scored two penalties against us this season.
Well,
he takes all their penalties, and then
Chiesa missed one against us at the beginning of the season, though too.
He did, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. They have a list. They have a designated taker, and you know you saw everyone taking the ball from Cutrone to give it to Pulgar. So they all know that. They know that's the order. Maybe he didn't know that, but it's not like it's his first day at the club. He's been there.
He knows now.
He definitely knows now. I don't know. I just think in that situation, you'd be happy you won the penalty for your team. High five your teammates, but don't beg to take that penalty. Any other penalty, sure, go for it. Make a statement.
I don't think it would have been as big a story if he'd have even whispered in Pulgar's ear, please let me take this one.
I agree. You know,
it was the
if
fact that
he'd done that, that's fine.
But I think Cutrone,
it was
now,
the,
we all know he's like a, we all know he's like a child in that he's, I don't mean like immature, but I mean like he's over animated and, you know, he's always that way. But yeah, I think it's a bit of a non-issue. I think
it is a non-issue, but I don't think anyone is a lot or should be laughed at or yelled at for being upset about it. I think that's a completely fair emotion, especially given the rest of the game. Emotions were high, and then to see someone that chances are you were a big fan of, really happy at your club, do that, you're mad, you're offended, no matter what.
I might have celebrated if you'd scored as well, because I still think we properly screwed him over. So.
I do think too. Screwed him over, but I wouldn't have scored him.
I wouldn't have cheered, no, but I think
smiled.
That we screwed him over, and I would have take him back at the club.
I would have smiled in an ironic way of like, this is just typical shit for us.
Yeah, no, I thought he was a shoo-in to score, to be honest. I fully expected an open play goal from him, but...
Just as a brief aside before we move on, Romagnoli, I'm fairly sure he got the ball. I haven't yet seen a 100% conclusive angle, but I've seen the one where the ball changes direction, and for me, that's enough, but the VAR chief decided to, for whatever reason, disregard that. Did he need to make that challenge?
No.
I don't know if he did, but to Romagnoli's credit, he's made that challenge multiple times in that game specifically. He made it against Juve, he made it against Torino, and he made it against Inter. He's been doing it the past few weeks. When you're on a hot streak of making these incredible slide saves, of course you do it. It's muscle memory. You're going to. So I don't blame him for doing it. Do I think he needed to? Probably not. I think he could have ran Cutrone out. But there's also the risk of Cutrone, you know, sliding it across him. And with it being Musacchio, who we all know is prone to mistakes in the box, Romagnoli made a calculated decision. And I don't think it was the wrong one. I think the wrong decision was the ref calling it because it wasn't a penalty.
I think he needed to do it. I think it was muscle memory. He got the ball, and it was just the ref making a bad mistake.
Yeah.
Did they even go to VAR? I mean, obviously said the VAR chief disregarded it, but I don't think they reviewed it.
I don't think he went to the screen, no.
Yeah, I don't think he did.
No, they didn't go to the screen, but the VAR chief looked at it and said, stay with your original decision. You don't need to... Because there's basically two things that can happen. You know, the VAR guy can take one look at it and say, no, you got that right. Or he can say, you need to take another look at it. And then that's when he goes to the screen like he did with the handball. And then he decided to stay with it. So that just baffled me that he didn't go to the screen. It was such a big call in a big game.
Game-changing decisions against
I don't know. I don't want to go around in circles here, but it's 2 points dropped. Top four's gone for me now. You know, if we can't see out a game like that, regardless of what happened incident-wise.
I mean, technically, this is the closest we've been to top four, but that's because there's a game in hand, and we would still need... four games worth of wins and four games worth of drop points between Roma and Atalanta to get it, and Napoli for that matter. But to me, it statistically, no, it's possible, but I didn't think we were getting it. Unfortunately, that's what Ibra's automatic renewal clause depends on. But do you think, given the changes he's made to this squad, do you think we still give him another year anyways? Even if we don't hit Champions League?
I don't think it matters. I think we'll sit down and talk about it with him and probably with Raiola as well, but I don't think he'll stay. I don't think he'll stay.
I think he'll
say that he came in, and it depends what he wants out of this. You know, does he want to leave on a high whereby people say, you know what, he came for 6 months, he gave it everything, he was still by far our best player despite being 38 years of age, and that's the way that he walks into the sunset? Or does he give it another year, hearing that we've got an ambitious project lined up or whatever it may be, and he's the one who helps spearhead us back into the top four or whatever it may be? You know,
I think it depends on that.
You can't totally rule out his last thing for Milan being him lifting the Coppa Italia trophy. You know, stranger things have happened. We might go to Juve and do the business with all the fixtures they've got knocking around and stuff. Even though he's banned from that second leg, whatever. You just can't rule out totally that might be his last moment. But I don't know how I feel as well about us spending that extra $6 million that it would take to keep him around for next season, when we could potentially... This sounds awful. You might shout at me for this. But we could potentially use that salary that we would save and put it towards a longer-term solution like Dries Mertens or maybe even Cavani, but I think he'd be a little bit more expensive. You know, I'm worried that if we were to try and extend the honeymoon for an extra 12 months, you know, 2 months into it, he gets a serious injury, or he really doesn't have it anymore, or, you know, we've already heard that he's sort of suffering from muscle fatigue between games and stuff, which is totally understandable.
But he hasn't had a real break since the MLS season ended, you know? I mean, he had obviously a month, but...
He's still in exceptional shape, you know? He is. And it's not just like he's the only one who tires. I think we, in both the Torino game and the Fiorentina game, the whole team has been tiring out. And I think it's because Pioli's demanding more with the press. And we don't have the midfield depth to keep doing it, to be honest. I'm worried that we're going to burn out. This is the thing, like, if you're a real sort of glass half full, you would say, well, we've still got Atalanta, Roma, and Napoli still to play. If we take 9 points out of nine, as unlikely as it is, then who knows where we might end up. But I look at those games and think, with the thin depth that we have, we could begin a slide back down the table. You know, we're only like 4 points off the bottom half again still. So I'd just be responsible from this point onwards now and say we need to make sure we finish in that top six. We really do need to make sure we finish that.
Top seven, probably.
I think that his renewal depends on what our plans are for next season. Like, if we're planning on bringing in a top manager, if we're planning on bringing in three or four players. But then also, if we win Coppa Italia, I think the chance of him coming back is less because that's such a high note to go out on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And I would be happy with that. If that's his ride into the sunset moment, then yeah, fine by that. I'll set that as my phone wallpaper, no problem.
Unfortunately, that game's before the last game of the season.
Yeah, I just not let him play. Stick him on the... That's the one way I go into as well.
No, you better fucking play that game.
Yeah, he's getting an injury before that, isn't he? That's if we even get to go. The entire rest of the season might end up getting played behind closed doors at this point, but we'll come on to that because we did get a good question from Ludwig Spazio, who says, what would you choose? It's kind of in relation, but what would you choose? Europa League qualification and Pioli stays on as head coach, or we miss out on the Europa League and get a top-notch coach of your choice among the realistic candidates that we've been linked with?
So, okay, my options are top coach, miss out on...
Top six, and we decide to stay with Pioli because they assume he's done a bad job, or we miss out on top six altogether, no more European football, and we throw money at another coach.
It depends who the coach is.
Top six, keep Pioli. I want stability.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if we... Yeah.
I don't know.
I think Pioli.
Honestly. I love Pioli.
Because if we get top four, the desire to get like a bigger name manager is there, but it's like, who deserves to stay more than Pioli if he could bring us from 17th to top four? You know, if we get top six, he still deserves it as well. If we don't get that, then I have no problem going back to square one because we might as well be anyways. If there is a takeover, if there is a project, if there are key reinforcements. I mean, if we're just year zero to have another year zero, then it's not worth it. But it's a big if that we really can't answer directly yet.
No, we are still in February. And I think Maldini did a really honest interview after the game against Fiorentina where he came out and said, look, it's natural in football to have sort of a management who all have different visions and there are problems in terms of those different visions. And I think that's where we're at the moment and neither... For me, it still feels like a Boban and Maldini against Gazidis in whatever's going on with regards to future appointments and stuff like that. You know, I then think about how Pioli must feel in all of this when he's got one guy in Maldini coming out and backing him, whereas all the media reports are saying everything else and Gazidis is coming out and saying that things will be evaluated between now and the end of the season. And I just think that, are the circumstances really going to be there at any point in the future for Pioli to properly succeed? Is he doing everything that he can to get this team playing the best possible football because he knows he's only got another 3 months in the job? You know, is he the guy to take us that next level into the top four? We won't know.
I don't think it's about is he the next guy to give us the top four. I think it's about is he the guy who's going to stabilize the club, because regardless if we get top four next season, if we extend his contract for the year, we get fifth place, right? Outside top four, teams playing great, then we can go get a top manager who we can be like, this is what we made, right?
Yeah,
or we can hire a GM Paolo who will fuck it all up again.
That is true. I think for a lot of fans, it will feel like it's deja vu. We're repeating the same scenario whereby, you know, we start a season badly or we have a bad stretch in a season. It's like, well, there goes top four again. You know, let's have another revolution in the summer, bring in this guy, bring in new players, all that kind of stuff. And it seems like the only thing that we haven't tried at this point is probably the two options that were listed there in the question. We stick with a guy who perhaps hasn't, you know, the results haven't really been there as such. He's got 9 wins out of 20, I think it is now. So that's in the league.
How many of those games were with Piontek, though?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Things have improved, but, you know, we've still got that murderous row of games coming up once again where we play the likes of Juve, Lazio, Roma. Obviously, still got to play Napoli, who are now level on points with us again. You know, they appear to be recovering from what looked like a mid-table season for them.
Is it Juve game, home or away?
Home.
I bet we at least get a point there. Juve's been playing like dog
shit. Yeah, this has been Juve's worst season for a while.
Yeah, I'd like
to still think they take the league. I would like to see Lazio take the league just because it's not Inter or Juve, but
we had the chance as well to. We were in talks to get Igliatore, who is Lazio's sporting director, and I just feel like I can't overly criticize anything that Ricky Massara is directly responsible for, and I almost feel like Maldini and Boban are acting as sporting directors at this point. And if there is one of the three that I would say could probably leave for the right replacement, it would be Massara. But you know, we had the chance to get Tare, and you look at the recruitment job that he's done at Lazio and the team that he's built, and then they gave Simone Inzaghi the time. You know, remember, he was only meant to be originally... whose assistant was he? He was the assistant the assistant
to... What happens when you give him time.
He was the assistant to somebody.
And if you think about it, in recent history, the only coach we've given extra time to has been Gattuso, and when we gave it to
Montella
him...
Montella, too.
Okay, true. Montella too, but he was always bad. Well, when we gave it to Gattuso, we were 1 point off Champions League.
Right.
And then things went backwards.
Those are the only, you know, the back to the original question, those are the only two options. There is no point sacking Pioli unless we have a top coach lined up. You know, don't go for...
What is a top coach going to do with this team?
Well... I'm going based on the assumption that if we can attract a top coach, it's because we've promised them A, money to spend, B, you know, a project of some description. You don't just attract a top coach by having absolutely no plan in place or anything like that. I acknowledge that we are probably not an attractive prospect for likes of Max Allegri at the moment. That's why I kind of like the rumours that Ranieri does actually want the job, and he fancies the challenge of turning us around, like he has done other clubs. But I understand also that there is a risk factor involved because he's only really done it in Germany. But yeah, I don't really know. We're in February. Things will become much clearer in March and then in April, and we'll see where we are. It's like the Gattuso situation all over again. But yeah, that's it. And then we've got Genoa on Sunday. They're struggling this season. You know, I watched them against Lazio and they played well. They played well enough for me to think that they could cause some problems. But also, you know, it's a Sunday lunchtime game. Sunday 2 o'clock game for us. Or 3 o'clock, something like that.
It's an early one. It's 4:30 in the morning for me.
So it's a 6:30 game.
Yeah, and we always do bad. And but, it might be behind closed doors.
Yeah, but that's a better thing in my opinion.
I think it's bad. I think our players have been thriving off of the hype lately.
Yeah, but you know, if it's one of those Sunday lunchtime games or Sunday early kickoffs and things are going as they normally do, you know, pretty badly, it's better not having the crowd to get on the players' backs, in my opinion. Which they do. You know, I don't care what anyone says. When things aren't going well, the crowd make everyone very aware of it. But I think we'll win this one pretty comfortably. I think Pioli will say, go out and send a message here that we're still very serious about finishing in the top four and that we're going to run it as close as we possibly can. And to do so against a side that's pretty much in turmoil, you know, they've got no stability. They've been through three different head coaches this season.
Yeah.
You know, they're just not really firing at all this season. Which they might go down.
Very well may go down, yeah.
And that'd be massive, you know, for a big club. They're certainly the size of like a AS Verona, who've been a bit of a yo-yo club recently. They're probably bigger than them. And they've just been horrendously mismanaged. And funnily enough, that's the team that we seem to assign most of our players from for the last few years. I don't know. I'll say 3-0. AJ?
I'm sorry, did you just go on this tangent about how this might be a rough game and then say we win 3-0?
I say it's better if it's behind closed doors. I don't think the pressure will be there and we'll send a message by winning comfortably. So 3-0.
I thought you were being negative. Maybe I was just missing.
I am generally negative, so I'd forgive you for that.
I think it's going to be scrappier than it needs to. I'm going to say 1-0.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say if it's behind closed doors, it's going to be way more scrappy than it needs to be. 1-0 as well.
Cool, that's good. Just quickly to round it off, did something today. You probably didn't read it because I don't think either of you read what I write, and that's fair enough. Picked out 5 free agents that we should look at signing. Quick yes, no, why, whether we should sign him. Dries Mertens.
Yes.
Yes.
One of the best strikers in the league. Yeah.
Ibra replacement, scored loads of goals in Serie A.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
Really, right?
Yeah.
Thomas Meunier, we've had a lot of problems at right back.
Yes, I think he's one of the best right backs out there. I think it's a travesty that he hasn't been renewed already at PSG, but yeah, I would sign him twice in a heartbeat.
Agree.
Might still renew. That's one that's, you know, there's yeah. talks that he might still renew. Matic from Man United.
No.
Pay cut? If I say he takes a pay cut.
It depends on what the wage would be, because he would bring some much-needed experience to the situation, to the position. I don't think he's going to be starting over Benacer, though. He might start over Kessier, but even then, Kessier's performance have gone up, so I don't know if it's worth signing him to be a bench player, you know, or a part-time player.
I think if we're going to stick with two holding midfielders, we may well get a new coach and change formation again, but if we're going to stick with that, we need at least 3 that are good.
Yeah.
You know, all you are is one injury away from having to play Çalhanoğlu out of position again, or obviously we've got Krunic, but he's got a hairline fracture in his foot, so he'll be out for another couple of weeks at least, apparently. So we do need depth. And
I would rather
Inter, who have 5 midfielders who would all probably get into our team, and that just makes me feel a bit ill.
I would rather pay the money for Bakayoko and pay him less than bring in Matic.
His contract's got to be up next season, the year after, right?
2022, I think, is Bakayoko. We looked it up. So that's Matic. Jan Vertonghen, I put him in.
Yes.
Tell you why I put him in over Thiago Silva, because he's over 2 years younger. He's on less salary. And if Meunier and Mertens joined, that would be 3 Belgians.
Okay. I mean, I don't really care about the Belgian thing, but yeah, I think it's
a good. If all 3 joined, I would say yes, just because that's team chemistry, you know?
FIFA.
All green there, baby.
Or would you rather Thiago Silva?
I'd rather Thiago Silva.
I don't know who I'd rather. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Vertonghen. It's no secret. I like the Spurs. But Thiago Silva's Thiago Silva. I know I said the Spurs. I don't know.
The San Antonio Spurs?
Those are the ones.
One of them played in the Champions League final last season.
Exactly. I was going to say, Vertonghen's probably got more top-level Champions League experience currently over the past couple seasons. But
Thiago Silva would be romantic, but, you know, it's like, oh, reunion with Zlatan. Yeah, if he stays.
Well, I also think he just picked up a pretty mean injury in his yesterday, didn't he?
He's going to miss a game, apparently. It's not as bad.
I know he got subbed off in like the 13th minute.
Oh, he's going to miss the Dortmund return leg. I read something like that.
Yeah. And he did pretty poor in the first leg against Dortmund as well. So
the general consensus, though, is that he's still got it, and that Italy would be the kind of league. But then again, he plays in a. It's not a farmers league. I like watching Liga games because they're kind of mental.
I've been hearing from a lot of diehard PSG people that Thiago's kind of dropped off pretty significantly this season.
Dropped off. Doesn't mean he's bad. A team that wants to win the UCL, or you know, could he do a job for a team that just wants to crack the top 4?
I'm sure he could, but I don't know. I didn't ask that detailed of a question.
Yeah. Number 5, bin Çalhanoğlu off. Let's say we need a new playmaker, Mario Götze.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm down with that.
No.
Wait, is he still chubby? Is he chubby still?
He's always been chubby.
Yeah.
So combined for Dortmund and Bayern, he has 330 games, 81 goals.
Who does he play for in the Premier League?
I guess he didn't. I don't know why I said that.
He flopped
at Bayern Munich, though.
He did.
Harsh. I think they just expected loads and loads of him.
You know, well, because he had that incredible incredible season, the summer that they signed him on a free, you know, the summer Bayern won the Champions League against Dortmund there. And then he had a great World Cup, obviously scoring the winning goal in 2014. So he had big moments, but then he went downhill fairly quick. I don't know. I mean,
he's quick.
I like him, but he's a little chubby. so he might not be.
I mean, he's certainly not slower than Çalhanoğlu. His attacking production is better.
I'm just thinking, give a guy who clearly likes to eat, put him in Italy with a lot of pasta.
Yeah, but then if we keep Rebic, then he'll say, look, lay off it, have this instead. And we'll have two absolute...
gluten-free vegan pasta.
Ex-Bundesliga dons.
Eat the cauliflower pasta.
Yeah.
There is no pasta left. Have you seen the supermarket shelves?
I did see that. That's crazy. What are we going to do?
What do you guys...
I feel like it'd be irresponsible. There does need to be a serious note to this and, like, genuinely hope that they get it under control. Because A, it's going to mess up, you know, a considerable portion of the rest of the season. But B, there are people dying and stuff. So, like, I really do hope they get it under control as soon as possible and find the patient zero or whatever it, whoever it is that's been supposedly spreading it. But, yeah, just get it. Get the shit under control, lads. So that's the list of five. And then one more question and we'll wrap it up. Maddie, I'll fire it to you. Christian Espinosa says, do you think Milan right now are better than Everton? Like, if they played a Champions League-style double over two legs, would you bet on Milan?
Did he actually ask that question?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think Everton would win. Everton's form right now is unreal. They have won the
second most. You just lost 3-2.
Let me finish what I'm saying. They have won the second most amount of points since Carlo Ancelotti's been hired. He's turned the team around.
What?
They have a goal scorer who scored 12 goals this season. They have attacking and creative players. We have Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Which of Everton's players would get into Milan's team at the moment?
Richarlison. For sure.
Over
maybe Andre Gomes.
Richarlison over Ante Rebic, really?
Yes.
Nope.
I don't know if I put him over Rebic, but
Richarlison's over Rebic.
Over
Çalhanoğlu. Yes, I would put him over Rebic in a heartbeat.
I'd put him over Çalhanoğlu.
He plays on the outside. He doesn't play as a center forward.
Put Rebic in the middle. Rebic, Çalhanoğlu. Okay. Çalhanoğlu.
You could do that.
You don't know how to move around players?
No, none of the midfielders would. If you still
had Andre Gomes, if he's better.
Andre Gomes,
sure. Leg is like destroyed, but didn't he come back?
He played this weekend, and he was our best midfielder since he's been injured.
It's not difficult.
What?
It's not difficult to be your best. I'd probably be your second.
Aren't you guys in another relegation battle over there in Leeds or Huddersfield, wherever you're from?
Completely irrelevant, but go on. What about neither of the fullbacks would? Who you got a centre back now?
Your fullbacks are
no. Yuri Mina, the Colombian guy.
No. Well, he's left sided, isn't he? Is he left footed?
I don't know.
Might be wrong. Lucas I know he scored Dinge? Against England in the World Cup.
He might start.
Oh he's yeah, right
bad.
Back. At right back, yeah, he's amazing. Yeah.
He's all right. Yeah, he's pretty good. That's it though. Calvert-Lewin's not better than Rafael Leao either.
God, I see that hate goal though. Calvert-Lewin so much. I think he's the most overrated player.
Interesting.
Jonas Lossel would obviously start in net over Donnarumma. Although he's on loan with us now. So that's it.
Did you just say
Jonas Lossel
would start? Oh.
Yeah. Wanted to throw that at you as a last question, but that's about it then, really, lads.
Are you guys not going to answer the question?
I don't know what it was.
No,
asking us? No, he wanted just know your opinion. He knows we're going
to No, he did ask. He did ask it generally.
Oh, Milan. Easy.
Yeah.
6-0. Over two legs.
Each. 12-0 aggregate.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a wrap then, I guess, guys. Thank you very much for listening to another week's episode. Hopefully we'll come back with a win behind closed doors or not behind closed doors, whatever it may be. Just keep checking out the site for the latest updates on that. Seen a few people have booked trips and stuff. It is always best to just check that out before you travel, obviously. But in the meantime, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. Being joined by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, it's been fun. Happier to discuss this now than I was after the Fiorentina game, but all good. Also, do us all a great big favor. Subscribe and like this video on YouTube. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheTorgrud45.
Yeah, when you subscribe on YouTube, also follow me at Madison_DT.
Thank you very much for watching, everybody, and we will catch you in a week's time.
Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava!